Welcome back once again, Parish of the Patriots, installment number 342. I remember when we hit 300, and we're already almost halfway to 400. Time flies when you're having fun, and you will have fun on this show. I appreciate you joining us this week. If you are new, this is your first time listening, I hope you'll give the whole thing a try. I think you'll get something out of it. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. As it were, that's roughly the halfway point of the show. And you may think, that's not for me necessarily. I don't want to hear a bunch of that. But give it a try, especially if you are a Christian believer. It is geared towards people who are already Christian believers and not really geared towards trying to convince anybody to become one. If you do so, then that's great, too. But I do encourage you to give it a shot. I have from time to time had people write and say that they're non-believers and they still enjoy it. So there's something to it. And we hope you'll give it a try. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Every little bit you send helps. It's as if nothing else, it's moral support. You know, it's encouraging to know somebody's getting something out. I'm not just yelling into the void. I got snail mail. There's crypto addresses on the site. Those are Sven's from before he went away. I don't have access to those. I don't do cryptocurrency. I haven't done cryptocurrency in a long time now. I got the snail mail address. You look on the description page for the show here on Radio Albion for the Parish of the Patriots show. Read through the description or skip it over. Most people probably do just skip the description. But you know, at the bottom, there's a snail mail address. That's it. Don't be emailing me going, how can I send you money? That's it. That's really it. Address and envelope. That's what I got. If you can't manage it, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. With that having been said, let's go ahead and dive into the listener supporter mailbag. And yes, we have a couple this week. GPD, hope all is well. A little dough for the show and cheers. That's from Jackie. I appreciate it, Jackie. Yes, a little dough for the show. It is. I do appreciate it. We do keep soldiering on. Sometimes we don't have nothing and we still keep soldiering on. See, that's the great thing. You get the show for free. There isn't anything behind a paywall. Because I ain't doing it for the money. I can assure you that. You get the show for free. And it is appreciated when y'all get enough out of it to say, hey, I'll throw something in there. Let's see. What else? We got one more here. Please use the small tithes towards your ministry as the Lord you see fit. And followed with Isaiah 40:31 and John 16:33 and Christ's love. That's from CJ. And you know what? John 16:33 is worth a read. No, I'm not preaching early. It don't take me but a second. But Jesus said, these things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Amen. We are in tribulation. No, and I'm not doing one of those evangelical things. You will never hear me. If you're new to the show, trust me, you will never hear me talk about the rapture unless it's in the context of mocking it as a silly idea. Tribulation just means times of trouble. You know, because you hear a lot of Christian people and they going on about we're in the second tribulation. We're in the tribulation. Look, tribulation just means a time of trouble, a time of upset, a time of upheaval. Look around. I don't think anybody, I don't care if you're a hardcore atheist, you look around and be like, oh, if that's the definition of tribulation, then yes, we're definitely in a time of tribulation, upheaval, clown world. All sorts of nonsensical things. For the believer, we understand these things are still temporary. Now, I am recording this show unusually on the morning that it's going to air. Normally, I record. Y'all know I normally record over the weekend. I've been busy. It's been busy crazy. You know, it just is what it is, but I stay up. I'm looking forward to the day when maybe some of this, at least the technical part, Sven can take it back over once he's a fully free man. And hopefully that's not going to be much longer. I'm looking forward to it. Believe me. Because my plate is quite full. And as a result, I'm only getting around to recording the show on the day of. But that's okay. Yeah, I did the show yesterday, Monday show, the Daily Mail Monday, as I like to call it, the Daily Nationalist show. And this whole story with the Mormon church thing, I mean, as I know, this is a miracle because I think this is the longest we've gone before authorities have come up with a man, have not rather come up with a manifesto. What the hell? What's that all about? I don't know. The government is not actually giving us a big BS narrative to buy into. So that does lend credence to the idea that this is just somebody who went off the deep end. Still no idea why somebody would go off and do some craziness. At some point, I guess they'll die. I don't know. The Las Vegas shooting, they just finally said, we don't know why he did it, but he done it. It was him for sure. I don't know how you're ever supposed to expect to believe that, you know, quote unquote, it was him for sure, when they can't even tell you why he did it. Isn't that kind of weird? But anyway, I'm big on conspiracy theory stuff, you know, because they always lie to us. You know, it's interesting. What drives me crazy, though, is people try to act like they know. I've said this before. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with being looking at conspiracy theories, because when the government lies to you and blatantly lies in your face, you know, you have to, you're looking, they give you a picture. I said this a while back. They give you a picture. Imagine a puzzle. You know, one of those picture puzzles. If you did those as a kid, I'm probably showing my age. Probably nobody hadn't done picture puzzles as a kid in 30 years. But when I was a kid, you would get these big boxes and they had all these puzzle pieces. I'm pretty sure I was being trolled as a kid, you know, because kids are supposed to get like these simple puzzles. You know, they're like, I don't know, a dozen pieces you put together. I got one of those, contains 597 pieces. Just sitting there trying to put this piece together. And they give us this puzzle picture and say, see, it's a picture of X, Y, and Z. But you're looking at it and you're like, well, kind of looks like that. But the problem is some of these pieces, y'all just got them laying there. They don't fit. And so you start trying to make pieces fit and you start trying to extrapolate with not enough pieces to create a real picture. And this is where you always wind up with theorizing. What wears me out is not the fact that they lie all the time, and that goes without saying. But people who then act like they absolutely have the answer, when they don't, you don't, because you don't have the information. You're never going to absolutely have the answer. You might have an idea. And the problem with that, and I don't, you know, I'm not sitting here going, anyone who does that's a fed or a shill or something. It's just people do that. People want to have closure. They want to know the whole story. It's like watching a season of anime and it's a really good season and they leave you on a cliffhanger and you're like, man, I enjoyed that anime. And non-anime watchers are like, what's this weeb on about? And you're like, I can't wait to see the continuation of the story. And you never get another season. It just never happens. And before, read the manga, bro. I ain't got time to read no manga. If I don't get it in anime form, I ain't getting it. It's like that. They're never going to tell you the whole story, so you're not going to have it. But people don't like that. They don't want to be left off on a cliffhanger. And what you wind up getting is people, even if they're well-meaning, they will come to you. Anytime somebody presents a conspiracy theory point of view on something, and yes, I do realize that term was invented by the CIA and all that, but hey, sometimes the best thing you can do is just own it and take away the negative connotations from it. Worst thing you can do when you're looking at these things is, in other words, if somebody comes to you, turn on a video or a podcast and somebody's like, I have the answer. This is exactly what happened from here to here. No, it didn't. They don't have that information. They're theorizing. It's possible. It is a possibility. But you don't have those pieces. And it wears me out when people act like, you know, this is it for sure. And they don't have any way to present that as proof because they don't have that information. You just have to be satisfied with the fact that you have an incomplete picture. You be satisfied with the fact that you looked at the obvious lies and the fact that the pieces don't fit together the way the government and the media is telling you, and that you reject that, and you can extrapolate and say, well, this is as much as we can know at this point. Don't be one of those people. It wears me out when people are out there like, this is 100% what happened. You're 100% pulling that out of your ass. Now you're no different than the government, except you mean well. I don't, that's not right, because you do mean well, but you're lying. This is where a dedication to the truth being reflected in all of your life, you know, preach a little early for just a second. Bear with me. You know, walking, you know, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And I think that truth word is such a big part of it. The truth is related to the faith, regardless of the topic. You can be talking about something completely unrelated directly to Jesus Christ. But if you're talking about seeking the truth, it is related in a manner to the Lord and to your faith. You seek out the truth in these. This is why when you see these blatant lies in your face from the government, you want to call them out. You're like, well, that's a lie. But you got to stick with the truth. You can't then just come out then and say, this is what happened. And you have no way of proving that. You know, you might say, I think this is a very real possibility. But, you know, you people going out there like, I've solved the puzzle, but they don't have any puzzle pieces. They can't say, you know, well, here's the evidence of that, where you can look at it, because they don't. You're never going to have it. You're never getting a second season. There will be a no season two of No Game, No Life. You're not getting a second season because they're never going to tell you. You got to sit back and say, this is what we do know. I mean, like, I know y'all wore out. I'm not going to go on and on about it, but the Charlie Kirk thing, you know. And this is another example where you see people going out there saying they've solved it. They know exactly what. No, no, you don't. I like to be honest with myself. You know, I can tell you, I see three things here. You know, and again, I know y'all probably wore out of hearing about it, but it is such a blatant lie of, you know, what the government claimed happened. So you step back and where we're at right now with the puzzle pieces we actually have. We have three things that I think we can go with. Three possibilities. Okay. Well, the first thing we can say is the government's version that he was shot from the front with a 30-06. That is absolute bullshit. We can dismiss that. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, that's just for somebody who lives in an apartment in New York City, has never touched a gun in their life. You can go on YouTube and there are multiple people who are doing ballistic demonstrations of what a 30-06 will do. Go look at those. If you believe Charlie Kirk had a magic neck that stopped a bullet, I more power to you, I guess. Walk in your delusion. I don't care. So piece number one is we know that's a lie. Their story of him being shot from the front. And again, I'm not doing a whole segment on this. Don't tune out. I'm trying to make an example of the proper way to look at and approach these things as I see it, you know, without getting off into details and claiming all of these details fit, but you don't have those details. You're just guessing. We do know as a fact, this is a fact, the narrative that he was shot from the front with 30-06 is bullshit. That's just demonstrative. You demonstrate that that's false. So that's, we can take that out. So we're left with two things, I believe. And again, more information could come out and give us other options. But where we sit right now, there's two possibilities. He was shot from the right rear, and that was an exit wound. That's possibility number one. And I think it's very interesting that they have to, because I was just thinking about it during all of this, a while back when all that was the big news, which we're already moving on from, you notice. But when that was big news, and I thought to myself, you know, because everybody, they do put misinformation out in the form of these conspiracy theories too, by the way, to muddle things. Like you notice, one of the things I noticed when people were talking about he was possibly shot from the right rear, his right rear, and that was an exit wound you see coming out of his neck. And, but then everybody's concentrating on where's the shooter? And they're looking over here for a shooter, and they're looking over here for a shooter. There was even this ridiculous thing that, oh, that guy in the crowd, he has a palm pistol, and he's shooting it from under his arm. Look, you're not going to make a shot like that. That's bullshit. That's just stupid. And it occurred to me, I thought, well, everybody's looking for the shooter. What if there is no shooter? I mean, do you think they don't have tech where they have a remote control device and somebody can be sitting out in the parking lot in a car with a tablet? And lo and behold, I came across a news story where, guess who? The Israelis have that very tech. They can ride around Gaza and they have this thing that basically looks like a camera or something mounted on their armored car. And the guy sits inside. He never peeks out. He has a tablet and he remote this things around and shoots some random people as the Israelis are wont to do. And he can snipe people and never poke his head out. Lo and behold, they have the tech. That's interesting, isn't it? That I would see that right after thinking, well, why is everybody running around looking for the shooter? Why do you think there has to be a shooter? But nevertheless, since the government's version is BS, you have two possibilities. As things stand now, things could change. He was shot from his right rear, and that's an exit wound out the left. Or the entire thing's faked. He had a Hollywood, you know, special effects thing on, blood spurted out, and it's all show. It's all an act. And that didn't happen. Now, again, I'm not saying either one of those is the absolute truth. I don't know. But as things stand now, that's our three things. The government's version, which is, again, you can demonstrate, is false. That is false. So you, as things stand now, and again, maybe more information will come out and you get other possibilities, but as things stand now, he was either shot from the right rear or the whole thing's phony. You may say phony, fake, a psyop, as it were. And look, I'm not saying that's what it is, but it is a possibility. It's a hell of a lot more of a possibility than, oh, a guy in the crowd shot from under his armpit and made the shot with a palm pistol. That's silly. My point here is, and again, I know y'all are probably sick of hearing about that whole thing. I don't blame you. I kind of am too. But I do find it curious because I think the truth is important, or at least to not buy into the lies. The proper way to look at these things is with the information you have, and you know you don't have all the information. So when you, it drives me crazy when people come out and act like, "Oh, I've solved the whole thing. This is what happened." You know, this is what happened. You don't know that. You know, you can say, "I mean, this is a possibility," but you know, what do you have to back that up? You know, like you get into who would have done it. One number one suspects are the Israelis, and they don't help themselves when Netanyahu keeps coming on TV going, "We didn't do it." They do have the track record. But anyway, the point is you don't have any evidence of that. And we always have to remember that. Anyway, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to go. Went on about that a little longer than I meant to. One thing you can be guaranteed of, though, you know, because people say, "What's the purpose?" You know, you hear that a lot. Well, what would the purpose of that be? Yeah, and I can tell you the purpose. They wind up, because it's the same purpose, they always wind up hurting us into a direction where we don't want to go. This comes with experience. I was talking here a while back, you know, reflecting, because when you get old, you see these things, and you've seen it all these times. And they create events, they have things happen, and they always use them as an excuse to push us further. And it works. You know, people don't like that. They don't like the idea that we're being herded. But it works. I mean, it's the plan works. War on drugs. I was a kid when we had the war on drugs was in its early stages. Sounds great, right? We're finally going to put an end to the plague of drugs in America. That's been, what, 40 years ago plus? How's that worked out? It's worked out about as successfully as most of America's wars here as of recent, ain't it? What did we get from the war on drugs? You know, some of this may be news for y'all that don't live in the U.S. It's not news for you who are. Drugs are still a thing. You know, everybody knows the DEA supports certain drug cartels and opposes others. We know this. They're getting a cut. You see, back then they weren't getting as big a cut. Now, the war on drugs, now the government's getting a cut of that money, among others. You know, Dr. Johnson's pointed out that a bunch of these banks are only solvent. Wall Street, all this money on Wall Street, they're laundering drug money. They're not going to end no war on drugs. Meanwhile, you yourself, if you're traveling along an interstate that's a quote-unquote drug corridor, you, innocent citizen, say you're going somewhere and you've got $10,000 cash in your pocket because you're going to, I don't know, you're going to go buy a tractor or a piece of equipment or something. $10,000. So, you know, you're going to go meet a private individual and buy this car or piece of equipment, whatever the hell. And of course, obviously, you're traveling. The guy knows nothing about you. He's not going to take your check. So you've got $10,000 in cash. And you get stopped by one of America's heroes. That's right. The boys in blue. You get stopped by a badge wagey. And he starts giving you the rundown. You see, here in America, because of the war on drugs, they have this little thing that's called asset forfeiture. Forfeiture. You forfeit your assets. Again, people outside the U.S. don't realize this is a case a lot of times. You think we're living in the land of the free. That, like so many things, is a lie. You see, the cop can actually look at you and say, that's a nice car you've got. How'd you get it? It's like, what you mean? How'd I get it? I bought it. What are you talking about? I don't think you could afford that. I'm going to bring the drug dog out. And you're like, well, I ain't got no damn drugs. And then they bring their dog out. And time again, they get caught on video. Like, they're walking the dog around and they sit there and jerk the leash three times. And the dog starts woof, woof, woof at the car. They make that... They can make that dog hit on the vehicle. They got a hand signal, and the dog knows when the hand waves in front of his face to do this. Oh, the dog hit. And that cop is going to get around to saying, do you have any guns, weapons, drugs, narcotics? Now's the time to tell me. You get in bigger trouble if I find it. And the one thing they'll also ask is, large sums of cash. Do you have any large sums? See, that drug dog's also trained to smell money. That's what they're after. This is a real thing. This is not conspiracy theory. They do this all the time, every day in this country. That cop could take your $10,000 and your car. No charge. He'd leave you sitting on the side of the road, hasn't arrested you, hadn't charged you with shit. And take your car and sell it. And they keep the money and your cash that you had. And it doesn't matter. You're like, look, dude, here's my text messages. I'm meeting this guy. It doesn't matter. They're taking your money, bro. 100% they're taking your money. It's happened time and time again. You have to prove that you're not the dope man. How do you prove a negative? You know what happens 9 times out of 10? You go to a lawyer. You're like, well, this is bullshit. So you go get a lawyer. And you know what the lawyer's going to tell you? It's going to cost you more in legal fees than what they're taking. So just let it go, man. You lose your car, you lose your $10,000. And they get it. They steal it from you. They're literal highwaymen. they literally are highwaymen that steal your shit. Thank you, war on drugs. See, they passed that thing. I remember when they passed asset forfeiture. And again, I was very young and didn't know a lot of things I know now. And I remember even being young and hearing about that. And I'm being like, well, that's not going to lead to anywhere good. Even as a young dumbass, I could see that. And you had people cheering it. Yeah, because they presented this narrative, you see. They arrest these drug kingpins, and they go to prison for a few years. And when they get out, they're still rich. They shouldn't be rich. You're not rich. Screw them. The government should be able to take that money and give it to our heroes. They literally steal your stuff from the war on drugs. You see, they give a narrative and it always goes somewhere you're not going to like. You know, they do. They go somewhere you're not going to like. 9/11. There's a more recent one. 9/11. The Patriot Act and all of the BS that came out with that. They sold everybody. And we're going to stop the terrorists. People went along. People celebrated it. I remember that idiot Bush standing up there. I always tell people, you know, when he was running for governor, because he was the governor of Texas, and, you know, I went to his a meet and greet event, and he was there, and I shook George W. Bush's hand. I'm reminded every time I wipe my ass. I met the guy and shook his hand, and you know, I didn't know nothing back then. And I'm reminded I shook his hand every time I wipe my ass. And, you know, remember, he was up there telling you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. So nobody wanted to be with the terrorists. They passed the Patriot Act, which they've been trying to pass a version of that for years, couldn't get it done. But now all of a sudden they could, because everybody convinced themselves they're going to use that to stop the Muslims and the terrorists. You can keep telling yourself that when you're trying to get on a plane and you have no Fourth Amendment rights. They just search you without any probable cause. They just search you, pat you down. You better not have any money in your suitcase, because guess what? They will steal it. Literally. Not just some rando at the TSA helping himself. They could do that too. But the government sanctioned will steal your money. They tell you, go on, get on your flight. But that money ain't going with you. That's staying with America's heroes. Right there in your face. Meanwhile, people are arguing about if they used thermite on the Twin Towers or not. It was thermite. No, it wasn't thermite. They steal your money. You have no Fourth Amendment rights now. Congratulations. And I have no doubt, you know, this stuff that's going on now, when the whole Charlie Kirk thing first happened, I said, you know, and they were given the narrative, you know, oh, we got this guy and he's a, you know, shacking up with a tranny. I was just sitting there and I said, people are like asking me my reaction. And I'm like, I have a feeling we're being herded somewhere. We're not going to want to go. Because I've seen it before. You know, we're going to get more events, you know, and they're going to be used to justify things that we're not going to like. And people, I'm sorry, I'd like to think that the American people are going to stand up and refuse to go along with it. That ain't what the track record shows. All you people talking shit like, oh, not me, buddy. I'm going to tell you what. I saw somebody, once again, it wears me out. I saw a comment, you know, I was watching a video about Britain, you know, in their digital ID, and, you know, enter Le Boastful American. That won't ever happen here. And people are like, well, why won't it happen here? And Le Boastful American says, unlike y'all, we got our guns. Like, it's a magic talisman. You have the gun, you wave it around, and it does, it's like a wand. It magically makes things go away because we have it. Your ass going to go along with whatever they tell you at the end of the day. You got your guns, but you still going to go get strip searched. Get searched at the airport. You're going to stand there and grit your teeth while somebody's patting down your 9-year-old daughter with their rubber gloves on with no probable cause. Shut the hell up. It's not no magic wand shit. I always laugh when these people are like, the government's going to use all this. They're going to use this to try to take our Second Amendment and take our guns. That's the last thing they're going to do, because they don't need to. I don't understand why Americans always think all this stuff is always an end goal to take our guns from us. That, I mean, don't get me wrong. That might at some point be like the final step. But there's no reason in the world they would stir up that hornet's nest. Like if the government came out today and said, the federal government came out and said, we're instituting a nationwide gun ban. You have 30 days to turn your shit in. They would have hell on their hands. People would fight that. And they know this. Why would they need to fight that fight? Because the majority of people are going to go along with whatever the hell they're told to do. You know? They can threaten to take everyone's guns and stir up a shitstorm and have a fight. You know? Or they could just ease you along like they have been. And you'll go along with. People go along with. They just say, do A, B, or C, or you lose your job. Do A, B, or C, or you can't have a checking account. You can't have a bank account. Do A, B, or C, or your credit score goes down. And people just fall right in line. They ain't got to fight no fight over your damn guns. That's a nothing burger. That whole Charlie Kirk thing, it's an event. Regardless of the details of what actually happened, which again, we're never really going to know. What you do know is it's an event. And when you have an event, whether it's the war on drugs, 9/11, you're always going to have something come out of it that you're not going to like. I suspect we're going to get for the First Amendment what 9/11 brought us for the Fourth Amendment. You know, they announced that they always announce this stuff. All they're doing is telling you what they've already been doing for probably 20 years. You know, Trump comes out and says, yeah, we're going to have this deal with Palantir where they just, you know, watch everything you're doing and create a profile on everybody in the country. So, you know, we can look at that if we need to. And people are like, hey, whoa, hold up. This doesn't seem very MAGA to me. But you see, you have an event like this, and you're probably not going to be the last event. You keep having these events. You know, now you've got this Mormon church thing. Maybe that's connected. Maybe it's not. But you keep having these events. And at some point, somebody will say, well, we can't go on like this. And the government says, we'll see if we institute the Palantir thing, which, again, they've probably been doing for 20 years. They're just now decided it's the time to let you in on it. We can stop it. We can stop all of the craziness. Y'all are wore out. They wear you down. They fatigue you with these constant crises, events. And they say, we can make it all stop. They're not going to tell you they're the ones behind it. We can make it all stop. We just need to put in the Palantir. You know, no one stops to think. 30 years ago, we didn't have this problem, and we didn't have Palantir. We didn't have Homeland Security. Why do we need those things now? Things were just fine back in the day. Why do we got the only answer now is we have to give up whatever rights we thought we had? I don't know, man. I can guarantee you they're going to hurt us somewhere we ain't going to want to go, because that's what they've always done. That's not even theorizing. That's just pattern recognition. I look back and they use these events. They create these events. They use these events. They create these narratives. And at some point, people will say, yeah, you know, they had the idea for the Patriot Act back in the 90s. You know, they just had to wait. Then when they got their event, their AI that they've probably had for many decades now, they acting like it's new, said, now is the point. Now people will go for it. And they did. Because we got to stop the terrorists. We got to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Afghanistan could invade Connecticut or some shit. Anyway, let's get into the Christian. We got to get in. We got to keep this show rolling. Let's get into the Christian specific segment. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. We may have a chance to get into several things today. Depends on how long we go with this first topic. So we may have several topics in the Christian specific segment. But I for sure wanted to start off with this one. And that is one of the most, what do I want to say, neglected, just ignored figures in the New Testament. And that is Judas. Judas, most of the time, is just painted as a cutout villain. You know, he's the bad guy. He betrayed Jesus. And, you know, the end. You know, we don't know anything about this guy. We know so little about Judas. And I don't know that I've ever heard anybody really dedicate any time to looking at and thinking about and discussing Judas outside of, again, the context of simply a movie villain whose only role is to play the role of the villain. But I think Judas plays a larger role. And I think, actually, he plays a role that we can learn from. I think he has a bigger role, in other words, than just simply being the villain in the plot who appears to betray Jesus. You know, you think about it, at the end of the day, Jesus did choose him to be one of his disciples, did he not? So I think it stands to reason that we should look at Judas a little more. And I think the best way to think about Judas is as a cautionary tale. If you discuss Judas and if you were to stand in front of a bunch of churchgoers and you would say, you know, do you look at yourself? Do you think you could do what Judas did? Do you think you could fall into the trap that Judas fell into? And I guarantee you, oh my gosh, no way. No way, man, not me. What a wretched traitor. What an evil person. And I think there lies in the danger. You see, you have to see the potential Judas in yourself to be on your guard. It always amazes me how quick people are to stand up and make Peter's mistake. You know, you remember when the time came and Jesus' arrest was at hand, and you know, Jesus basically flat out told his disciples what was going to happen, and that you're all going to abandon me. You're all going to be scattered. You're going to be banned. I'm going to be drug off by myself. And Peter's like, no, not me though. Maybe all these other guys, Lord, but not me. I'll stay with you to the end, even to death. They arrest you, they're arresting me. I'm by your side through the whole thing. And he meant well. You know, he meant well, and Jesus knew he meant well. But Jesus was like, no, you're not. You're going to embarrass yourself. You're going to run off. You know, you just shouldn't say these things. And Peter, obviously, eventually would die with Christ. Not at the moment Christ was executed, but he died for Christ later on. But he wasn't ready yet. I mean, the zealousness was there. The willingness was there. But he just wasn't there yet. And he makes that mistake. You know, not me. You hear this all the time when people, you know, because we got all this end days talk going on, you know, because they're doing all this crazy satanic shit. Digital IDs. I saw Keir Starmer. I'm getting a little off topic, but I saw Keir Starmer talking about the British digital ID that they're rolling out. And you can tell how far gone people are by where they roll it out. I mean, nobody thinks that digital ID is just for the UK, you know, but you see the British populace is more beat down. They're further down the road than everyone else. So they're rolling it out there first and they'll see how it goes. They got to give a little more time in some of these other areas. But, you know, Keir Starmer is talking about the digital ID for Britain. And, he, you know, he's basically like, you won't be able to get a job. You won't be able to buy. You won't be able to buy, sell, get a job. And I'm like, where have I heard this before? And with all this end days talk, and you'll see people posting on the internet, Christian people, and they're like, it's the mark of the beast. They're rolling out this beast mark. I'm not going to do it, though. Not me. I tell you what, we got to be ready, because I'm going to tell you, I'm ready. I'm not going to take the mark. And it always reminds me whenever I read people, you know, proclaiming these things, believers proclaiming these things, I think of Peter's error. You know, not me. I'll go to the cross with you, Lord. They're taking you, they're taking me. He means well, but was he really ready? Peter made that error because he failed to stop and really self-reflect about where he was. Well, I believe one of the really fundamental things we have to do as believers is to constantly be looking to ourselves to see where we're at, to reevaluate where we are in the faith. I mean, I'll go with you. And he had failed to do that. And so he proclaimed this meaning well. I'm sure he had every intention to follow through with that at the time. But when the rubber hit the road and the guys showed up with swords and spears and torches and there's a mob around and they're dragging Jesus off to certain execution, maybe not. You know, he trailed along behind and, you know, then wound up, of course, denying Jesus, denying even knowing him. Out of fear. When people boastfully proclaim, not me, I'm not taking that beast mark. I always think of COVID, you know? People that be like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Yeah, I always think, did you walk around with the mask on everywhere like you were told? How much did you comply with the COVID nonsense? Because it is related. It's a test. Did you pass? Did you fail? Did you get a mixed mark? How well did you resist the pressure? One of the things that's interesting in that, along the lines of that social experiment of COVID, was the fact for those who didn't do all of that, you know, if you wound up confronted in Home Depot or the grocery store or something, most people, it wasn't like it was government authorities that were hassling you, was it? It was your fellow citizens applying. See, the government didn't have to do shit. They have all of these other people out here screaming at you that you're killing them because you don't have a paper. You don't have a paper towel. You don't have a bandana over your face. You put something over your face and then it's okay. The ritualistic face covering. And I'm thinking, how much less so if you really are talking about you can't buy food? You're not going to be able to pay your freaking light bill, much less have a job without this digital ID. If you truly believe it's the mark of the beast and you're not going to do it, really? So you're just going to starve to death. You're just going to be homeless then. You're just going to be homeless or thrown in jail or whatever, but you're not going to get it. I think they make the mistake. They fall into Peter's error of not really thinking it through and speaking ahead. I think the more proper response is to pray that if such a thing are to come to pass in your lifetime, that the Lord will strengthen you and give you guidance and discernment and watch after you so that you can avoid doing this. Now, you know, mistake. You're literally talking about not being able to buy food or turn, you know, keep the electricity on or, you know, make any sort of money. It's not something to flippantly dismiss and say, not me, I ain't falling for it. That's because people say that they have this imagination that they won't be alone. You know, if they refuse it, they won't be alone. There's going to be all these other people across the country that refuse it. But again, if you look at COVID, no, more than likely you're going to be alone. You can stand up and say no, and you should, don't get me wrong. But don't be thinking that you're going to have this crowd of people around you, you know, in fellowship with you of not going along with it. You have a crowd of people calling you names, conspiracy theory and you know, theorist and whatever else. But again, I want to talk about Judas because once again, people blurt out and say, boy, not me. I wouldn't be anything like Judas. Judas, he's the betrayer. What could we possibly learn from Judas? I think we can learn a lot. I'm just going to do a couple passages concerning Judas, which you're all pretty familiar with. We're going to start off with Matthew chapter 26. I want to do verses, let's see, we're going to do verses 6 through 16. Let's see here. And now, when Jesus was in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, there came unto him a woman having an alabaster box of very precious ointment and poured it on his head, and he sat at meat as he sat at meat. But when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, to what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor. Now, I want to stop here for a minute. Not just Judas. Judas was not the only one who is indignant. It says his disciples, when his disciples, plural, saw it. So his core group of dudes that have stayed with him through thick and thin through all of this, the whole group got indignant over this. It wasn't just Judas. Why, we could have sold this ointment to the poor for much, or we could have sold, I'm sorry, because we wouldn't sell it to the poor, they didn't have no money. This ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor. When Jesus understood it, he said unto them, why trouble ye the woman? For she hath wrought a good work upon me. For ye have the poor always with you, but me you have not always. For in that she hath poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this that this woman hath done be told for a memorial of her. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said unto them, what will ye give me, and I will deliver him unto you? And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. Now, I want to extrapolate a little bit of something here. It's not written, but I suspect at this point of what we just read here, that Judas, in a roundabout way, indirectly perhaps, had already been approached. In fact, more than likely, I bet the other disciples, they'd been felt out. You know, you're going to get in his inner circle. See who these guys are. Somebody might be willing to work with us. I suspect, and I think it's a reasonable thing, because it just, to all of a sudden, because of, after this one incident, go to the chief priest and be like, what do you pay me? I suspect he had already been felt out. Now, we can tie it together with where we're going to get to here in a minute, you know, where this winds up. If he had been felt out already, because again, I think it's kind of strange that just out of the blue, he would go marching down to the chief priests who were seeking to, you know, who were seeking Jesus' life to hand him over. Now, again, it's not written, so we're just assuming that. But even if I'm incorrect about that, where we're going with this is still going to hold true. But I do believe it's reasonable, a more reasonable, because you have either out of the blue after this one incident about this expensive ointment being used for Jesus and being indignant about it, because the other, it says all of the disciples were indignant about it, his disciples were indignant about it, but they didn't go on and betray him. You know, they were indignant about it, but then when Jesus spoke about it, they let it go. They didn't keep going on. They didn't start arguing. But this guy, from this one incident, went to the chief priests and the rabbis to see about betraying him. I think it's more reasonable. This makes more sense if feelers had already been put out. You know, we could make it worth your while if you'll work with us. Now, stick with me through this, because I do realize we're having to think outside of what is written a little bit. I don't think we're adding anything. We're just considering a possibility. Now, as such, what makes more sense to me is word had gotten around, again, possibly indirectly, that anybody that's willing to work with the authorities here, it could be made worth your while. And that seed was planted. You know, the seed was planted. And because we're told in other places, I'm not going to go look it up and read it, you know, but it's mentioned in passing that Judas would help himself to their purse, because he kept the purse for everybody. You know, they had a collection fund, you know, they'd go in a place, Jesus would speak, teach, maybe perform some miracles, and people would give him money. Well, Judas is the one that held on to the money, and he would sometimes help himself a little bit out of the bag. So you see that tendency already there. Now, if feelers were put out and it was made known, heck, even if feelers weren't put out, it would be pretty well known that these guys would be willing to work with you. You could get something out of it. The point here is that what you see then what you would have, rather, in this case, is Judas has been working over time to justify doing something that in his heart of hearts, he knows he shouldn't do. To commit a grave sin, there's that temptation of the money there, to commit this grave sin, but he knows he shouldn't, and he's trying to justify the sin he's going to commit. He's trying, instead of looking at himself and saying, no, and pushing that out, he's considering it. He's building some justifications for why it's okay to commit this sin. This is something I think is so important that we can learn from Judas. You know, Jesus famously warned that, you know, if you look at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery in your heart. Basically pointing to, it doesn't just pop up one day. When somebody commits a big grave sin, they didn't just wake up one day and randomly do that. They were working towards it. They started from somewhere. A seed was planted, and they wound up cultivating it and watering it, which is what you do when you're working up justifications to do this thing that you want to do, that you know in your heart of hearts, your soul, is a sin. You're working, you're coming up with reasons. And it's really okay. It's all right. Instead of looking at things for what they are, this goes back to what I say. I believe one of the important things we do is constantly look at ourselves in the light of truth. And all it's, you know, even though what we look at might be ugly, we got to force ourselves to look at ourselves, who we are, what we're doing. Are we building justifications? Are we really considering a sin, committing sin, and for what reason? if this is what Judas had been doing up to this point, it makes sense. He's been building these justifications and creating a narrative for himself in his mind of how this is justified. You know, again, this guy wasn't a cartoon villain or a movie villain. You know, he was a person. He had spent all this time with Jesus. You don't just wake up one day and go, well, I'll betray him and kill him, you know, have him killed. He had to build a narrative. He had to build a narrative for himself. He had to convince himself that there was some justification for this. And this incident was the final thing where he could justify to himself. He doesn't think it's right, and he's not alone. You see, if it was just him, that might not have been enough. But you see, when he was sitting there being indignant about it and thinking, man, this is so wasteful. He's probably thinking we could have sold that for a lot of money and I could have maybe got some of it. But see, you dress it up. There's a way we always tend to deal with sin that seems appealing to us. We dress it up and make it look nicer. We could have sold that ointment and the money given to the poor. That would have been a good, righteous thing. And Jesus, he's just letting this woman put it on him, pour it on his head. I don't know how that works. It always seemed weird to me. They poured it on his head. I'd be like, what'd you pouring on me? But it's a different thing. See, this was the final justification he needed. He'd been working up to it and thinking to himself, and no, I really shouldn't. But, you know, what did he just say here? That doesn't seem right. But maybe, you know, and he's building a narrative. This is what we need to learn. Because the sooner you spot that you are doing that, the sooner you can nip that shit in the bud. Because the longer you let it go, the more it takes root. If you see a weed popping up in the yard, the sooner you pop it out, you pull it up, the better off you're going to be than if you let it grow big. It's going to be real hard to uproot it. The sooner you spot what you're doing. Look, is this sin? It is. Forget this stuff I'm building up as justification. That it would be okay. Forget all that. Pull it up by the root. Throw it on the fire. Burn it and walk away from it. The sooner you do that, the better off you're going to be. Judas held on to it, thought about it, considering it. And finally, the turning point, that last little push that he needed was this incident here. And he had help. He had people that essentially, when he's sitting there being indignant, because it doesn't say they were verbally indignant, but you could probably just see the look on the face. It's Jesus. It says Jesus, you know, perceived that they were indignant over. So it sounds to me like they were more or less quiet. They weren't voicing their indignation, but you could see it. It was written all over their faces. And Judas is sitting there needing that last little push to justify to himself what he was really wanting to do, because he's thinking about that 30 pieces of silver. Boy, he could buy some stuff with that. He's probably telling himself with 30 pieces of silver, I could help the poor. I could feed the hungry. I could do all sorts of great things. Needed that final little push, and the final little push comes along. And he looks around, and everybody else is indignant. It's not just me. Maybe it's just me. No, I'm looking around, and Peter and all the rest of these guys have an uncomfortable look on their face because they're thinking the same thing I am. What is this? This is expensive. This is just a waste. We could have sold that for a lot of money and given the money to the poor. We could have bought supplies for the next 6 months while we walk around doing our ministry. What's going on? He did pull it out. He didn't nip it in the bud. He didn't pull it out by the root early. And now it's festered, and now it's grown, and now he has that final little justification. And when he looks around and sees the other disciples are also indignant about it, that's the confirmation he needed. It's not just me. Everybody else thinks this is bullshit too. I do a lot more with the heat pouring oint. He's letting some woman pour expensive ointment on him. I could take 30 pieces of silver and help the poor. That makes me a better person than Jesus. Now let's skip ahead to Matthew 27, verses 1 through 5. When the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel, convened the council against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, we're back to Judas. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? See thou to it, or see thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed and went and hanged himself. What can we learn here? First, one of the justifications he had told himself was that, well, they're probably just going to like punish him or give him a good talking to. He had convinced himself, I think it's fair to extrapolate from this, that he had convinced himself that they weren't going to execute him. Maybe they even told him that. Well, we don't necessarily want to execute him. We need to make sure this guy's not speaking outside the law. You know, we're a real problem. We need to find out why he's doing what he's doing. Judas had convinced himself that they weren't going to execute him. That was one of the justifications that to help him along that road of committing this sin. Because, and again, I think that's a fair extrapolation because as we just read here, when he gets word, no, they're going to execute him. You know, well, if that was a part of the deal, if they told him, well, if you'll betray him, you know, into our hands, we'll pay you so that we can go kill him. This wouldn't have fazed him because he would have expected it. When word got out that they were going to have Jesus turned over to be killed, he reacted in a manner to where he had built up a justification that they weren't going to do that. I'm sure they didn't tell him they weren't, but they probably intentionally left it vague. You know, that's how it often works. You know, well, maybe not. Maybe we're just going to talk to him. We don't know yet. We haven't even convened the council yet. And he's able to create this narrative. They're not going to kill him. They're just going to, you know, make sure everything's cool. Maybe these guys will even quit persecuting us and we can go about our business and they'll let us go in peace. Hell, they may even work with us. But when he gets word that Jesus is indeed going to be executed, then all of the lies, all the justification, the lies he told himself, the narrative he created himself came tumbling down and he saw what he did. You know, he saw what he did. Then, and there comes the second part of why it's an important lesson we can learn from Judas. And again, to do that, we have to get outside of this idea that he's just some movie villain who only plays the role because you need a foil. You need a villain to move the plot forward. With his narrative he had created for himself, that, you know, they wouldn't kill him, you know, they're just going to talk to him. Maybe lock him up for a while, make him see clearly. And I'll be able to take this 30 pieces of silver and help the poor or something. When he finds out that they're going to kill him, that whole narrative he had built for himself to justify what he knew in his heart, he had to know it was a sin, it imploded. It came crashing down and he saw it for what it was. Now it says he repented of himself. We know repentance is action. So what did he do? He went back and tried to undo it. He did. He went back and tried to undo it. But see, time, this is the tricky thing about time. It only flows one way. And once you make a decision, you can't unmake it. You can't undo it. He tried. You know, I mean, it's too late. And that's the cautionary tale as well. He didn't pull it. He didn't nip it in the bud. He didn't pull it up by the root. He built up a justification. See, this was a process. He didn't wake up one day and go, I'm going to betray Jesus because reasons. He went through the process and he had every day that he worked through that process was bringing him closer to making this fateful decision. And once you do it, you can't undo it. You know? I mean, you can't. You can move forward and try to do better next time, but it doesn't change the fact that you can't undo what you did. If you go out and you're starting to get flirty with somebody at your job, and you keep letting that fester and go on and go on, and then it culminates and you cheat on your spouse. You can't undo that. You may be sorry. You may realize it was a huge mistake. You know, your spouse may find out about it, and y'all may even work through it and decide to keep working forward and to put it behind you as best you can. But at the end of the day, you can't undo it. What's done is done. Your spouse looks at you, you're going to know every time they look at you, they know what you did. You can't undo it. He repented of himself. He realized, man, what have I done? And he tried to undo it. Like, you know, and you can look at it because of the irrationality of it, going back with the silver. Like, what, he's going to give them the silver back and they'll let Jesus go? But that just tells you, basically, he was frantic at this point, really being confronted by what he had done. His whole narrative he'd built up, his justifications imploded, came crashing down when he hears they're going to put him to death. Now he's panicked, and he's trying to undo it. You can't undo it. This is why it's so important to nip sin in the bud as early as you can, to constantly be looking at yourself and going, what am I doing here? Am I trying to build up a justification for something that in my heart of hearts I know I shouldn't do? The sooner you can come to grips with that and pull that out and walk and throw it on the burn pile and walk away from it, the better off you're going to be. Because if it keeps festering, it keeps growing, you keep playing around with it, and then one day you do it. You can't undo it. You can't. Because things out of your control did come into play. You know, he went and threw the bag of silver back at him and said, take your silver back. This isn't what I bargained for. And what did they tell him? They said, that's on you. You know, the phrase there, you know, you saw to that. That's on you. That not on us. You're the one who took the money. You've done what you've done, dude. Why are you bringing back the silver? It's done. That's all on you. That isn't on us. And that bag of silver, that 30 pieces of silver he wanted so bad, it went back where it came from. Now, I always warn, you know, these people that you see that are promoted, they're all created entities, and they all take the ticket, as the saying goes, and they take the money. When they give you the money, they do it because it's not yours. It always comes back to them. You see, they gave Judas the 30 pieces of silver, and it came right back to them. It was theirs. It cost them nothing. And that's the way it always works. They, you know, if they come to you and say, hey, you know, we're going to support your group as long as you do what we tell you to. We'll give you $30 million. And you do $30 million? That, how generous of them. No, because they know that you're going to spend that money. Now, you know, when you look the way money is created, I'm getting a little off topic, but it is relevant to in a sense. The way money is created through debt and the fact that there's always more money owed than is in existence, that necessitates that any money out there will come back to those who create the money. And we know who creates the money and how it's done. It's borrowed into existence. So what, you take the $30 million and you go buy you a $2 million house, because why not? Well, you pay somebody for the $2 million house who then takes that money and pays back some of their debts. And look, the money went right back to where it came from. That's the way it works. So they're never giving you anything. They're giving it to you knowing that eventually it's coming back to them, the money creators. I just think it's kind of a detail that's interesting. The 30 pieces of silver, he didn't even get that. He spent, who knows, how many months, you know, agonizing over this, trying to decide, trying to create a justification, building in there, because he really wanted that silver. Man, he wanted that silver. and creating a narrative and a justification for himself that it would be okay. They won't kill him, and I'll have the silver, and we I can help the poor with it. All of this other nonsense. He wanted it so bad. And then, at the end of the day, he just threw it down on the ground. He gave it back to him. He didn't even get the silver. They got Jesus. They got to put him to death, and it didn't even cost them anything. And Judas, what? He wound up with that. See, that's the way sin works. Devil promises you. Devil lies to you. The enemy lies to you. It's going to be great, though. You know, that's why it's a temptation. It ain't temptation. You know, nobody's tempted to go, I don't know, stick their hand in a meat grinder and grind their flesh off. Nobody's tempted to do that because that'd hurt like hell. The enemy always tells you sin is going to be great, though. It's a temptation because, man, it's going to be fun. You're going to have a good time. It's going to feel good, whatever. And it's never what you think. It's always destructive. It's always a disappointment when it comes around. He took that silver. He'd spent all that time agonizing because he wanted it so bad and creating a justification to go ahead and take it. He takes it. Realizes what he's done, and the silver meant nothing to him. He threw it down, tried to undo it. You can't undo it. And ultimately went out and hanged himself. You can sit around and say, I wouldn't be no Judas. Look, everybody is a Judas to an extent, because everybody at various points in their lives starts building a justification for something, to do something that they know in their heart of hearts is a sin. When you're sitting around trying to, you got something, you're tempted by it, because whether it's money, sex, whatever it is, and you're building these justifications up in your mind, you're going through the process of Judas. Not saying you're betraying Jesus to death, that's on a whole nother level, but you're following the path of Judas. But you have free will. The sooner you can recognize that and look at yourself honestly, this is a part of the judgment. You're looking at yourself honestly, and the sooner you can come to grips and be honest with yourself and say, I know this isn't right. What am I doing here? Excuse me. I'm trying to build a justification to do something I know isn't right. I know the enemy's telling me, it'll feel good. Oh, it'll be fun. Oh, I'll have that money and I can buy so much stuff, whatever. But you know it ain't right. Sooner you can recognize that and pull it up by the root and throw it on the brush pile and burn it and walk away from it, the better off you're going to be. Because as Judas found out too late, once it's done, it's done. You can't undo it. You can move forward and repent and do better. And in Jesus Christ, praise the Lord, we can do that. But you're better off not doing it in the first place. You're better off nipping it in the bud, pulling it up by the root, casting it off, and walking forward. Because again, at the end of the day, what's done is done. I really think Judas gets neglected a lot, just painted as a movie villain type character and brushed over, when really he serves a very distinct purpose. Judas serves as a cautionary tale. And maybe that's one of the reasons Jesus picked him to be one of the 12. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of today's discussion. We wound up staying on that topic through the whole show, but I think it's worth discussing. Again, hope you got something out. Hope you enjoyed the whole show. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be back tomorrow with his Orthodox Nationalist program. And of course, he'll wrap up our week on Thursday with his installment of the Daily Nationalist. So I do hope you enjoy the rest of the week. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.